The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey, old dogs. I just want to take a moment to welcome a new sponsor to the show, Smart Move. Smart Move is the best way I know to protect yourself from evictions and bad tenants. Smart Move has a special offer just for old dog listeners. Just go to tenantscreening.com, enter code OLDDOG25 at checkout, and you'll get 25% off your next screening. That's tenantscreening.com, enter OLDDOG25, and get 25% off your next screening.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge, dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. You'd mentioned earlier that you have the parks that do have some RV spaces. I mean, is that something you try to get rid of as soon as possible if you do acquire a park like that, or is that something that's profitable?
No, the RV spaces, I mean, there's a whole RV industry, and the RV industry in America, contrary to the mobile home park industry, has done great as far as public perception, and RV sales are every consecutive year for the last decade higher. Right now, they're the highest they've ever been in American history. And that's because you have a lot of people, you have 10,000 boomers retiring per day. Huge number of them either buy or already own RVs. And a huge number of those then take those things out on the road all the time. So there's a whole business model there. If you have RV lots, our RV lots, we typically section into what are RV sections inside of mobile home parks.
Right.
And we have no desire to take those apart because there's still good money in the RVs.
Right, right.
It's just it's a different product line. It would be like having, you know, a certain kind of cosmetic counter inside of your department store. I mean, it is a business. There's nothing wrong with it. But we try and keep them, since they are really very separate business models, we try and keep them separated to some degree. Because RV people don't really want to be around mobile home park people and vice versa.
Right.
RVers want to be around other RVers. They want to socialize. They're a different demographic often. It's a whole different deal.
Got it. Yeah, it's interesting because I have apartments that, you know, some of them I actually rent out as Airbnb units, and it ends up being more profitable than the actual, the rental of the monthly lease.
Right.
Some units. So I was just wondering because it seemed like a similar kind of situation.
Very similar.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Kind of sticking with this theme on the billboard side, are there billboards that you wouldn't buy?
Well, let's talk about billboards because it's very, very very similar, but yet very, very different. What makes a billboard work or not, first primary thing is visibility, right?
Right.
Because you can't see it, it isn't worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had billboards that were just doing fantastic, and then someone builds an obstruction in front of it, and it's absolutely worthless.
Mm.
So when you're looking at billboards to buy, the first question is, how visible is it, and what are the risks to visibility? So if you're buying a billboard in an area that's fairly developed, all the buildings are already there, then that might be fine. But if you're buying a billboard in a non-built area that's in the path of development, it's risky because you could build a billboard, that could build a building in front of you the next day. So you have to really be mindful of visibility. That's critical. And along with that comes longevity. Most billboards that I used to build or buy came with 15-year leases with 15-year options. The whole industry is built on long-term stuff.
Hmm.
And you don't want to build or buy like a 3-year billboard. You can't do it. Most billboards, when you build them, it takes you anywhere from 1 to 2 to as many as 10 to 15 years to pay off the debt. I mean, the steel monopole signs that you see along the highway, some of those cost $100,000.
Man.
So longevity, visibility is key. And then the real key component of billboards, of course, is economics. And what really makes a billboard profitable or not profitable is that spread between lot rent and what they rent for. So, if you look back on my most profitable billboards of all time, my most profitable billboard of all time, in fact, was an old wooden sign. It had three panels on it, one on the top, one underneath that on one side, and then a single side on the other, because I got huge revenue for it. It was on the pathway to a whole lot of subdivisions. So I had huge revenue. I had very low land costs because it was an old unit. I think it was only paying out what was equivalent to 5% of revenue, whereas modern signs, the big steel signs, typically pay out between 20 and 30%. And then I had almost nothing in it. So, I guess put to you this way, a lot of people look at billboards and they assume that all the money is in those big steel monopoles you see along the interstate. That was true if you built those back in the 70s and the 80s, maybe the 90s, but there's probably more money, actual money in the loan to build a single steel monopole. I go out, take my $10,000, I go out and build, I try to be a real cheap shopper, maybe build 3 wooden signs and then keep building 1 or 2 a year after that out of cash flow. And then 5 years later, I'd own 15 signs, making $75,000 a year. And 5 years later, you'd still be paying off your first mortgage on the first one.
Interesting. And you mentioned leasing. Do you actually own the land that billboards are on and you lease the sign itself? Or when you're talking about leasing, or are you leasing the land?
Well, here's something really weird about the business that blew me away when the guy told me. It's kind of like those 3D puzzles that you look at and you stare at them long enough and suddenly an image is visible in your brain that you couldn't see. I don't know if you don't know what I'm talking about. This.
Yes, I know what you're talking about. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, so I'm in the billboard business. I own maybe 3 or 4 signs. I have lunch with a guy at one of the big companies. He's been in the industry at that time for 40 years, let's say. And so we're talking about land and stuff. And I said, man, I can't wait till I'm big enough to buy the land under my signs. And the guy would say, well, that's the dumbest thing ever. I said, I don't understand. Why would I not want to buy it? He goes, well, why do you think we don't buy it? We're Foster Kleister. We're a $1 billion company. We could buy all the land under all of our signs. Why do you think we buy it? Like, I have no idea. I thought you did buy it. No, we never buy it. We just rent it. I said, why? He goes, well, think about this for a minute. I mean, that land is only of value to you for that sign. What do you do if that sign, what do you do if this building gets blocked? The land, I would have no maneuverability at all. No way I could pivot in any direction. So it made a big impression on me. So that's why people don't buy the land is most billboard companies, they have all the rights they need. I mean, typically the signs are grandfathered. So you can't move them, can't do anything with them. And they like the flexibility of not owning the land. They don't like sticking capital in the land. It doesn't do them any good.
Interesting. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, going back to the early days, I mean, if owning the land was a positive, MBJ, the federal government controls the supply of billboards. And to control it, just like the De Beers control diamonds, They only allow them in certain zonings and in certain distances between them. And it all harkens back to the period there at one time where there were no laws on billboards until the 60s. You could build them anywhere. Mm-hmm. And if you go down old Route 66 in certain parts of America, you see them everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So the Beautification Act's goal.
Yeah, the signs where there's like a word on each sign, going for like 10 miles down there.
Yeah, it's just crazy. So what happened was the government was concerned that we would have just this insane proliferation of signs as the interstate highways were built. And so they wanted to do a trade-off. They wanted there to be signs to educate consumers of where like hotels and restaurants were, but they didn't want to have blight. And so that's why they did it. And, it's worked. I mean, in most states of America, there's not so many signs that it visually drives you crazy. But a lot of people don't realize that when you're in that industry, you are in a federally controlled industry, and it's pretty tight, tightly controlled. And so you have to understand the laws on location.
Gotcha.
Because you can't just pop in and build them anywhere you want. They have to be in certain spacings and certain zonings.
Interesting. Wow. Well, I'd mentioned our audience are folks that are 50 years of age and older. They are either approaching retirement, and so they're planning, and they're, some of them having sleepless nights thinking about whether or not they have what they need to be able to provide for themselves and their healthcare needs and all the other things that come with it in retirement. And then you have others that are already retired and they're realizing, hey, I don't have the cash flow that I really want to have in retirement. And so they're looking at real estate investing and some of the things that we've talked about today as a means to be able to supplement that. And so what advice would you have for those folks listening in both areas, really? In terms of those approaching retirement and those that are in retirement that they could do later in life like this that would be something that would benefit them in their retirement years.
Sure. Well, I was an economics major at Stanford. I'm really all about supply and demand. And I like industries where there's not a lot of people doing it because I feel that's where the opportunity is. Right. So even though I don't do, for example, single family homes, I would be turned off to it because I see so many people doing it. I like to be in weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where the competition is low. That's where I always think that's where the money is. I want to do stuff that most people don't want to do. So both billboards and mobile home parks definitely meet that rule because very few Americans even know about the industries or want to participate in them. Now, between those two, there are segments in both that require very little capital. So if wanting to get into them and said, well, I want to get in it, but I don't have a lot of money. I got $5,000. I might have $10,000. Both industries work. Now, the billboards, if you were getting into it with a lower amount of capital, you'd want to focus heavily on not those big monopole signs. Those are man-eaters of capital requirement. You don't want to mess with that stuff. Instead, you want to focus on second and third tier markets and country roads where you can build good old-fashioned wooden telephone pole-styled signs for $3,000. Or you can go in there and maybe build a wall scape, which is when you attach a vinyl to a wall of a building, things like that. But there's definitely opportunity there. I know lots of people who have gotten into the billboard business later on in life, sometimes almost just as a hobby, just as a lark, and they've got portfolios of 10 or 15 or 20 signs that make them a very, very healthy income. On the mobile home park side, number one, you can invest in mobile homes. So a lot of park owners started off doing mobile homes because you can buy a mobile home, a used mobile home, and a mobile home typically $1,000 or $2,000, and then rehab it, and then sell it or rent it. So that's one item.
Okay.
On the park side, there are a lot of broken parks out there. We've done 12 deals with Zero Down. Now,
wow.
To do a zero down deal properly, though, let me warn people that when people talk about zero down deals, what they always leave out is the capital cost after closing, right? So if I say, I'm buying this building for zero down. I remember there was a building in Dallas along the interstate, a multi-story, maybe a 30-story building that sold for $1 because it needed like $20 million of asbestos abatement. So that's not, that wasn't really a $1 deal, right? I mean, yeah, the guy bought the building for a dollar, but he had to spend $30 million rehabbing it.
Right.
In mobile home park world, you actually can do full-on zero down deals. Now, where they came from, let me give you an example of one that we did. It was a park that showed terribly because the pop had died. Mom was now in charge. She had never run a business in her entire life. And so she just kind of quit. And she let the park become overgrown like some kind of Aztec pyramid down in the middle of the jungle in Mexico. So she'd stopped mowing for 3 years. Now, when you stop mowing, what looks today like an organized, beautiful country club turns into, you know, the wild. And so although the park had great infrastructure, it had nice roads, concrete curb and gutter, concrete parking pad, city water, city sewer, and the lots were large, she stopped mowing, and the grass grew literally over all the streets. So when you pulled in the park, all you saw from the minute you pulled in were weeds and grass that had grown as high as they physically can grow, right? And then spilling off into the streets. And so it looked like I don't know what, Chernobyl or something. And she was half occupied. And those people who were occupied, they were mowing their yards. But most of the property had the worst drive-up you've ever seen. So when we looked at buying it, she had so little confidence in this mess that she created. She said, here's the deal. I'll carry the paper. And you don't even have to give me any money down. I'll just go ahead and just assume you're going to need all that money to clean the place up. The trick was it didn't cost you almost anything to clean it up. All it cost us to clean it up was we had to get someone first stage to come in there with a brush hog. And I mean, we had to mow it like 5 times to get it initially mowed because mowers can't mow that height. So we had to get like progressive pieces of farm equipment to bring it back down to humanity. And then we had to obviously edge the living heck out of it, round up the living heck out of it. But at the end of the day, when you added all that together, it wasn't very much money. I mean, it was like to reclaim the thing with all the mowing and all the edging and all the thing. I want to say it was like $2,000 or something. It wasn't terrible. And then we were right back in business. So those deals do exist if you're a good shopper and you watch for them. But it's typically deals where the park has terrible cosmetics, but the underlying fundamentals are decent. Those are the best kind. But there are, I mean, I'll give you, there's a guy we know up in Pennsylvania, and we call him Sean of the Dead because we buy parks that are dying and bring them back to life. He buys parks that are dead and brings them back to life. He buys parks that everyone has given up hope, including the city, that you can bring it back. And he does this. That's why I call him Sean of the Dead. And he has so little money in these parks, it's insane. I mean, he has like 60 space properties that he only has $15,000 in.
Unbelievable. Wow.
Okay. So, I mean, again, I think the reason there's opportunity in both billboards and mobile home parks and mobile homes are that most people just don't ever think of there as being any in that. So your competition is very, very light. Like, I don't meet anyone in my real normal life who does mobile home parks besides myself. And I've never met anyone who does billboards either. So, I mean, I basically have spent my entire life working in industries that are so rarefied that nobody, no one you meet in social groups, your church, volunteer groups, nobody's in those industries. And I love those kind of industries.
That's great.
That's my kind of thing because that's where I get good deals.
I love it. Great advice. You have quite an amazing story here, and your business just seems like it's still just going gangbusters here. What sort of ahead for you in terms of, you know, where your company is going and where you want to see it in the next, you know, 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road?
Well, you know, we're right now, as we sit here, we're fifth in the U.S., but there's probably no chance we'll ever get to fourth. Because to go up from where we are now, you have to exponentially double each rung up the ladder. Mm. So I seriously doubt, given our age and the market, that we're going to double yet again. So I don't think you're going to see us go up much in size. Our goal right now is we're trying to take the properties we have and fill every single vacant lot and home. That's a big push we have this year. We'll probably go out for the next several years. But beyond that, I don't know. I mean, we've always looked at the market. We try and be very fluid in the market. We never try to make commitments. So right now is still a good time to buy. There will also be at some point a good time to sell. So who knows? I might talk to you 5 years from now and we own half the parks we own now, or we might own 50% more than we own now. But I don't know. I mean, it's not, there's not, we don't have any certain finite goal other than just try and stay smart and stay nimble based on the way things are going. And so we don't really know beyond that. I mean, back when we were starting up, obviously our first goal was just to get our foot in the door and own a park. And then I guess it was after that, let's get enough parks that we can hire, you know, employees to watch over the park so we don't have to worry about them 24/7. But at this point in the movie, you know, we're fifth largest. We have 400 employees. So we're not really trying to grow for the sake of growth. We're just trying to make smart decisions with what we got and watch for opportunities.
That's great. And you've got an educational component to what you do as well, right?
Yeah, we do. Although, you know, it's a very weird thing. What happened was back when Dave and I got in the business, again, there was no one we knew in the business. And Dave had this little tiny website called mobilehomeparkstore.com. And what happened was, you know, the internet was new, it was fresh, and we didn't know if people even cared about the park business. So we started writing little goofy books just to see if anyone cared. We were kind of like a Mega Man. I mean, it was kind of like us getting on a radio signal. Is there life out there in our industry? So we wrote these little books and put them out there. My first book was called I'm With Stupid, 50 Stories from a Trailer Park, where I told the 50 dumbest things I'd ever seen people do. Dave was like the intro to mobile home park accounting, because Dave is an accountant. And to our amazement, people liked them. People buy us the little books, and then they'd email us and say, hey, why don't you write more little books? We love these little books. So we started writing more little books, and then that somehow all organically grew into these things we do now, which are called boot camps. We do about 8 times a year. They're completely organically grown, and what we have is about half the people there are existing park owners. The other half are people who want to buy parks. And it's basically just a immersion weekend of nothing but mobile home park knowledge. So we just talk about every single thing of how to find the parks, negotiate them, do due diligence on them, renegotiate them, finance them, turn them around. And it's become very, very popular. We probably have had almost every park owner, larger owner in America there. We've had the media. We had New York Times was there. National Geographic was there.
Wow.
Because it's like, if people want to learn everything there is to know at this one moment about the mobile home park industry, they go to that event. That's the bottom line. I mean, National Geographic was doing a segment on affordable housing in the U.S. They looked around and thought that was their best way they could learn about the industry in 3 days. And so that's what it is. It's all education. We don't sell coaching or mentoring or any of that stuff. It's literally like a college course on mobile home parks. And it's drawn a large following over time simply because people love, since we never meet anyone else in life who owns a park, it's refreshing to occasionally talk to people who are in the same industry, getting their latest feedback on what they're doing.
That's great. That's great. Wow. Well, we have so much good content in this interview. I'm totally stoked here, and it's probably going to end up being a two-parter here, because I didn't want to cut you short. I apologize if I ran over too much here time.
Not at all. No problem.
But there's so much good stuff there.
Evicting a tenant can be painful and cost as much as $10,000 in court and legal fees. The best way to protect yourself from evictions and bad tenants is to screen your tenants. And the best way that I know to screen your tenants is Smart Move. Smart Move is part of TransUnion, a trusted consumer reporting agency with more than 4 decades of experience. They built an online screening service for independent landlords that delivers critical credit and background reports to you in minutes. It is a valuable tool to help you when you are trying to decide who to put into your rental property. And they can help you find your next great tenant. Only SmartMove has a credit score built specifically for rental screening called Resident Score, which can identify eviction risk 15% better than a traditional score. With the SmartMove report, you'll also get a criminal background check, eviction history report, as well as a full credit report. And only SmartMove has Income Insights, a report enabling you to analyze renter income to determine if further verification is needed. See why 9 out of 10 users recommend SmartMove, and more than 4 million landlords have used SmartMove to make better leasing decisions. SmartMove has a special offer just for Old Dog listeners. Go to tenantscreening.com, enter code OLDDOG25, and you'll get 25% off your next screening. That's tenantscreening.com. Use code OLDDOG25 at checkout for 25% off your next screening. SmartMove. Reduce your risk of non-payment and evictions.
We are now sort of moving into what we call our wrap it up session, where I just ask you a series of quick questions.
Sure.
On favorite resources and so forth that you utilize that'll be helpful for other folks. If you're ready, we'll go ahead and
let's do it.
Wrap it up. All right. Favorite real estate book?
The Man Who Bought the Waldorf, the biography of Conrad Hilton.
Great.
Love the rags to riches angle to it. I've never seen a book in which somebody built an empire, lost the whole thing, and built it back in one lifetime. It's pretty impressive.
That sounds great. Great book. How about just the favorite general business book?
Favorite general business book? Boy, there are lots. Cause I'm an avid reader. I read biographies of almost every business and military biography ever written. Probably my most recent favorite book on that is Am I Being Too Subtle by Sam Zell.
Oh,
a brand new book. It came out about a year ago. Sam Zell, for people who don't know, is the only person in America to be largest in three real estate sectors. He's the largest mobile home park owner, apartment owner, and office owner in American history. But what I love about the book is it's all about risk-reward. That's how he views his entire life. Everything he does is based on risk analysis. It's not a topic you see in most real estate books, but, you know, it's kept him out of trouble, and it's very interesting. So I would rank that as one of the best books I've read in recent times on real estate and business.
That's a great recommendation. That got me wanting to read it. That sounds like a great book. How about the most valuable website for success?
Boy, that is tough because we use so many websites. In the housing industry, you've got to love the website bestplaces.net. We refer to that constantly when we're analyzing markets. We love the ease of gaining the information, the accuracy of it. That site's amazing. I don't even know how it exists. But if you go to that website and put in your own zip code, it will tell you everything about your own neighborhood with such accuracy it'll blow you away.
This is the first time I've heard this. I've heard of this. This sounds like a great website.
Great website. Bestplaces.net. Another, I'll throw a couple others out that we use.
Sure, yeah.
Good old Google Earth with Street View. Man, how many times has someone said, I got a mobile home park for sale? We pop onto Google Earth Street View, look at that and say, buddy, that is not our cup of tea. Mm-hmm. That park is so old, so beat up, terrible location, dirt road, we don't want it. It saves us so much time in travel.
Right.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable thing. Another thing we use a lot, which probably many people use, is Zillow. We love when you take raw data, housing data in market, it tells you, for example, the median or average home price in the market. What I want to know is what the home prices are up right against the property I'm looking to buy. Mm-hmm. Because you always have the good neighborhoods, the bad neighborhoods. Zillow is so user-friendly. You just go in there, you find your property, it'll show you every home around you, what they cost. And even though the information is not always exactly perfectly accurate, we would admit, because a lot of it is guesstimation based on square footage without anyone seeing your house, you can definitely, by just looking at the aerial of the town, you can figure out exactly where the most desirable neighborhoods are. And so we love that website a lot also. And then we just use Wikipedia. I mean, our industry has been so massively enhanced by the advent of the internet. It's not even funny.
I bet.
I mean, I'll throw one other app people probably are unaware of, but on the mobile home park side, if you go to mobilehomeparkstore.com, there's typically about 800 to 2,000 mobile home parks for sale on there.
Oh, really?
And many people, wow. Yeah, many people don't even know that site exists.
Oh, that's great. That'd be a great resource. Thanks. Oh, great. How about a favorite app?
Boy, favorite app.
Something on your phone, maybe.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I don't have an app that I use in business. I mean, my favorite app is the app that, that tracks my daughter's phone so I know where she is. And
that's good.
But that's, you know, app-wise, I think I'm probably is there. I probably use the same apps most people use. I mean, I'm using all kinds of apps, the calculator app, you name it app, but I don't have an app-specific item for mobile home parks.
That's okay. That's okay. How about favorite quote?
Boy, favorite quote. Here, I'll give you several. One of my favorite is time kills deals because it means you have to live your life with a constant sense of urgency. I mean, if you have a deal that you can sign up right now or you can let it slide to Monday, do it now because by Monday, somebody else has already taken it. I love the quote I used earlier that problems are only opportunities in work clothes because that's what I do. I buy problem stuff and fix it. So what most people look at and go, ooh, that's screwed up. I look at that and go, ooh, that's an opportunity. So that's another good quote I use. Gosh, what other quotes? Another good quote for you would be, behold the turtle. It only makes progress when it sticks its neck out.
I like that.
Because you can't get in real estate unless you're willing to take some degree of risk.
Yeah, that's great. Good quotes. Good quotes. Wow. And then our final question here. And if, let's say, you lost absolutely everything you had, all your assets, everything, and you just are stuck with $1,000 in cash in your hand, knowing what you know today, what would you do with that $1,000 to relaunch your real estate investing business?
Well, if I had $1,000 to relaunch my real estate business, I think I would focus on things that are obviously low capital requirements, but high level of opportunity with low competition. So me being what I know with my skill set, I would probably go right back into mobile home parks, probably started off doing deal assignments. So I would tie deals up under contract and then sell assignments of those deals, which is a topic we didn't talk about, but is
like wholesaling, right?
Yeah, like wholesaling to mobile home parks, exactly.
Yeah.
Big money, no capital required on that. You know, I might go out and build a billboard or two. Probably what I would do more than anything else is I would probably try and find a partner with capital. I mean, as long as you guys have knowledge, it's not hard to find people who have capital who want to merge that capital with somebody who knows how to do something.
Sure.
And then form some kind of like 50-50 partnership and go out and restart right back in the industry. Because, you know, with only 1,000 to start with, obviously your options are somewhat limited. If you have the knowledge of how to do stuff, then often you can be ramping up the capital quickly would be the best concept. But those are probably the guys I would do.
Yeah, I'm taking people out to lunch or coffee or something, you know, using it for that or just for your phone bill just so you can call.
I will throw out one thought, which is, you know, Harvard did a very lengthy study a while back on what made people happy. And in fact, the study went on so long, it the people who started the study died of old age, and it continued on, and then it ultimately wrapped when all the test people died. And what they found was the most important thing, and you may have read this, was relationships. So, you know, if I lost everything tomorrow, that would be a real, real bad thing. But the key item is, where do I stand with the relationships?
Right.
So, you know, if you have all the money in the world, you have bad relationships, your life's not any good.
Yeah.
So for anyone who's lost their money, I would say that, you know, don't despair too bad, because the relationships are the key.
Yeah.
If you have happy, healthy relationships, then the money's not that important. So, you know, things do happen to people. People have stuff. You can get wiped out in America today through the most simplest of catastrophes, insufficient health care with some kind of huge issue there, maybe a lawsuit that you've been unfairly accused of, yet through the American court system, you get injured from that. But, you know, as long as you keep your relationships good, that's where you got to focus, is always keeping good relationships.
That's great. Great advice. Wow. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of folks listening that want to find out, you know, more about you, your company, the boot camps, things like that you mentioned. What's sort of the best way for people to you know, find out about that, those kinds of things, and or contact you?
Sure. Well, the best way to contact me or read all that content I write, I mean, I write, 10,000 words a month for the newsletter that I write for the mobile home park industry. I wrote one also for the RV park industry. And I wrote another one for the billboard industry. And that you can find all these various items at the website that Dave and I have, which is run by Dave's son, Brandon. It's just www.mhu.com, which stands for mobilehomeuniversity.com. And if you go to that site, there is so much material. It's crazy. I think I've got 500 recorded hours of discussions, and then I've got well over a million words in print there.
Wow.
So yeah, if you want me, just go there, and anything you would ever want, it's all sitting there.
And you mentioned there's also billboard information on there too.
Yeah. Well, if you want billboard, I think it's, if you go to www.outdoorbillboarduniversity.com, that's where you would find the book I wrote about how to get into the billboard industry. The reason I wrote that book, I'll tell you, it's kind of a weird story, because I wrote that book years after I sold out, because I had learned all this insanely industry specific information, right? I mean, stuff that no mortal needs to know, like, you know, how to take an existing sign and make it, like how to change the foundation to make it 10 feet taller, just crazy knowledge. And I, you know, there's not a single book in America on the billboard industry. It's crazy. If you talk to billboard people, they view what's valuable is the actual knowledge, which they protect, like Harry Houdini's secrets.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, you know, if I die, all this information is lost that it took 14 years to assemble. And there may be people who want this information. So I wrote the book kind of like a military surplus tool for people of the information I had learned. And so that's why that's there. It's just for anyone who wants to know all the insider secrets. Well, they're all in there, because that's all the stuff that I spent 14 years learning.
That's great. That's great. Great resource. Man, oh man. Well, this has been so fantastic. I just opened my eyes up and mind here. Just and I thought I knew a lot more about mobile homes than I did. you know, then until you started talking, I go, gee whiz, a lot I don't know. Really good information. Really appreciate that.
So one other item I wrote past, which is if your thoughts on mobile, when I say mobile home park, to most people, they recoil in terror.
Mm-hmm.
Because most people get all their knowledge of mobile home parks from television.
Right.
So they watch Trailer Park Boys and Myrtle Manor and the movie 8 Mile. And that has nothing to do with our industry. That is completely fictionalized.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would urge anyone who, when we're discussing mobile home parks, and if they're thinking 8 Mile or Trailer Park Boys, go on Google and look up mobile home parks in your area and go drive a few. Because what they look like is they look like high density subdivisions.
Mm-hmm.
And you got Hondas in the driveways. Homes are vinyl sided, shingle roofed, got landscaping, got the carport, might have the garage. That is not the stereotype that the media has created for our industry. I mean, we have been so misaligned by the media. And, you know, they did that because they get a lot more viewership when you use the word trailer park, because everyone assumes it will be sex and violence and whatever. But that's not our industry. I mean, everyone in the industry who sees this stuff, they're like, we're always trying to educate people. That is not the industry. So if you're listening to this and saying, oh, I would never invest in that nonsense, that's dangerous junk. And no, that's not the industry. Yes, there are some really nasty trailer parks in America, but it's a tiny little pinhead of the actual total. I mean, 8% of all Americans live in mobile homes.
Mm.
And, you know, but the media loves to focus on this one little tiny narrow thing.
Right.
It's just kind of crazy. It'd be like if every automobile depicted in the media was covered in rust and leaking oil and barely running. So when you said American automobile, people thought, oh, no, I would never want one of those. Well, it's just not. So if you're listening to this and you've got that stereotype in your brain, we need to displace that by going and actually driving some actual mobile home parks, because they look nothing like that.
Yeah, that's good. Good information. Well, Frank, we have a tradition here at the Old Dogs REI Network that a lot of our guests you know, just catch them a little off guard. But hey, you know, we are called the Old Dogs REI Network, mm-hmm. and our guests always close us out with their best old hound dog howl. So if you are ready and you think you're up for the challenge here.
Sure, I'll give it a shot.
All right, let's close it out. And thanks so much, Frank. Appreciate it.
Okay, here we go.
All right.
That's the best I got. I'm not very good on howls.
It's all right. It was good. It was good.
Okay. Good.
Wow. Well, thanks, Frank, again for being with us. And this will definitely be a two-parter. So I think this is going to be a great, great information-packed. Both episodes are going to be great. So, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
And also, I just want to thank all our old dog listeners out there, too, for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate it. Please note everything we talked about today and all these great resources and information that Frank shared today can be accessed in our detailed show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog, and you're going to look for the episode with Frank Rolfe. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.